When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello, happy Monday, and welcome to the Indie Football Podcast. I am your host, your venerable host, Ed Mallion, sports editor of The Independent. I am joined for this incredibly busy Monday by the chief sports writer of The Independent, also Miguel Delaney.
Chief football writer. Johnny's just gone to Australia. We haven't...
Chief sports writer Jonathan Liu can't be with us today. He's on a plane to Australia for the cricket, something Miguel is really looking forward to this winter. How do you see the series going?
Good, yeah.
Yeah, no, I thought you were. And so alongside Chief Football, who is playing? It's a bit like the boat race. Yeah, who qualified this year? I think England and Australia both qualified for the Ashes again. Yeah. Incredible record from
That's
the two
amazing,
teams.
Isn't it?
Yeah,
no, it is.
Accompanying the Chief Football writer, as he wants to be known, it's our sports news editor, Ben Burrows. Say hello.
Hello.
Also Matt Murphy, obviously producing, hasn't got a mic this week. Probably for the best. Don't want to look at him. Just a little chomp already. As ever, we're coming up to awards season. You may have noticed. I don't know if we've mentioned it several times, but the Football Sports Federation Awards. So if you're listening now, you're probably capable of going to the website and voting for us as best podcast. It's category number 6. And also while you're there, you might as well vote for Johnny as writer of the year, because he's better than any of the other people on the shortlist, basically. So now we've got the housekeeping out of the way, I guess we should get to the football, or not. In fact, we'll get to breaking news.
Yep.
Tony Pulis sacked as manager of West Bromwich Albion. I haven't got the quotes in front of me, but I'm going to say he's very thankful to the club for its time and the experience, and he wishes them best of luck in the future. What can we take from this? So they got battered by Chelsea at the weekend, Migs. Was it 4-0?
4-0, yeah.
And, you know, it kind of got on Ben's radar at the end of last week, because I was saying this was a big story going to the weekend, and Friday. So Friday, he warns the fans, you won't find someone better than me. Saturday, program notes, they were equally spiky, weren't they? They were pretty punchy. Saturday gets battered by Chelsea. The fans turn on him. It feels inevitable this is going to happen, and then Monday morning it happens. So what does this tell us about West Brom, and to an extent, I guess, the state of mid-table teams in the Premier League, Miguel?
I mean, I was slightly surprised maybe that it took this long, given this has been issue been gone for some time. There's been kind of some disenchantment with Pulis, but also... I suppose what really kind of rammed it home was last season. They got one, you know. I know it feels like such a cliche and maybe it's such an easy thing to talk about, but it's such a relevant issue that they got to the 40 points last year and then just dropped off. And it was just kind of, it just showed the lack of ambition there. Like, I mean, one thing I keep coming back to with this whole debate is, all right, money has distorted the game. The club's going to go to a certain level. But when you're watching football, when you're supporting a team, what you really want of it is at least the idea and the sign that this can be better, to have a bit of hope, a bit of excitement about it. And West Brom were almost, for the last year, maybe beyond that, were basically the opposite of this.
And Ben, 11 without a win. So you can see, in a world where Pulis is supposed to be the results guy, as soon as you go 11 without a win and you're playing the sort of football that he plays, you're always in trouble.
I mean, the joke doing the rounds already this morning is that, so a team 17th, 10 without a win, who could possibly save them? The best candidate out there is Tony Pulis.
Well, it is.
But for, I guess it's only from fans' point of view who actually in it, who they've been saying for weeks and weeks and weeks that they're just tired of this football. And from the outside, you might think, well, look, you're mid-table in the Premier League. 10 years ago, you were a yo-yo team and dreaming of this. But yeah, like Miguel says, at a certain point, what's the point?
Yeah.
You need more. You need to...
You go to football for whatever about all the stuff we're going to support and aside and all this and, you know, the devotion that it requires. You're still going to football as an escape. You don't want... That's a bit of a curse there. you don't want brutalist survival as your escape every week. Like, that's not an escape. There's enough of that.
having supported a Tony Pulis team at one stage, you know, he was really good when he was at the club I support, and he saved the club, and he does what Tony Pulis does. But every club, every Premier League club he's been at, which is three now, Stoke, Palace, West Brom, they've all got kind of sick of him, the fans. Yeah, yeah. You know, every single place, they do turn on him. And I do wonder now, because I think there is so much competition for eyeballs in the world now, you know, with Netflix and stuff, and sport is changing, how people consume sport is changing. And if you think about it, like, every sport is making more of an effort to turn it into an entertainment spectacle now. So, the NFL is kind of doing well in London when they come over, because you've got the game, fine, the game's fine. But that's an all-day thing, basically. Yeah, yeah, 2020 cricket is kind of the new important form of cricket, certainly in terms of money, because, you know, yeah, they come and it's short and it's explosive and stuff. But really, you know, it's like cheerleaders, drinks. Mm. There's all the other stuff going on off the field that people are watching. And the new owners of Formula One said they want every race to be like a Super Bowl. Football needs to be entertainment as well. Mm-hmm. And it's like, if you are watching a club, it's like, yeah, we're going to finish between 9th and 20th every season. We know that. You want to do is survive relegation and be mildly entertained. And I think that does influence clubs' thinkings, because like Crystal Palace chose Frank de Boer because they thought they were going to have this some sort of attractive Dutch total football. You can understand why West Brom fans, if they're not getting the results and they are disappointed with the actual product, that they'd want something else. The question is, who comes next, and should they be concerned?
Just on that, before we get to that, I think there's an interesting tangent there. How soon is it then? I mean, given what even the Premier League market itself has, and how there's so much debate on whether the kind of boom can last and all that, or, you know, particularly at home, maybe more so with broadcasters, whether it's worth their investment. How long will it be until clubs start making decisions based on that, not just in kind of on how many points they can win, but how many points they can win combined with, we have to put on a show because we're in the entertainment business?
I guess, to play devil's advocate, the club I support are no longer in the Premier League. So there'll be a lot of fans screaming, saying, we'd bite your arm off.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Doing 10th and 15th in the Premier League every year and getting 40 points with 5, 6, 7 games left.
Well, we're reeling them up.
But it's all relative. I mean, and that's like, also, I suppose, like anything. Once you get to a point where nothing is changing, you just get fed up with it, and it's kind of the Arsenal debate in terms of kind of Wenger's future, that there was always kind of fourth place or whatever. So it's all relative in that sense, I suppose.
But if you're one of these mid-table clubs, and we were talking about this the other day with regards to Pulis, I think we were talking about Allardyce, and we're saying that there are several clubs who felt like they'd outgrown Allardyce. Bolton being the obvious one. Bolton got to a point where they were like, oh, maybe you can't take us any further, in the same way that Stoke got to that with Pulis, and Blackburn did that with Allardyce, and Newcastle and Allardyce just didn't really work. But West Ham kind of with Allardyce as well, you know, it's thinking you're too good for this effective manager, and what is the next thing up? You've got to look at it, I guess, in a way that when you're a mid-table club, if you have a bad manager, he's going to get sacked. And if you have a good manager, he's probably going to get nicked off you. So if you're left with anyone for any period of time, and I think we're seeing this with Mark Hughes at Stoke, and we had seen it with Pulis at West Brom, is like stability in the mid-table region really is like as bad as going backwards. That's how it's perceived, isn't it? You have to be seen to be progressing the time.
Yeah, yeah.
But actually the owners a lot of the time, They take the stability because the cash that you get every year for staying in the Premier League is absolutely bloody enormous.
I mean, this is it. Like, in terms of kind of, given how volatile football is from a financial point of view, and how difficult, you know, there's all this talk about how difficult it is to project, and if you're trying to make money out of football, or it's about, that kind of mid-table stability that is so dull for fans is probably perfect to a certain degree for anyone looking to
the expenditure's low and the income is huge.
This feels significant in that regard. West Brom, I suppose, over the last 10 years, 5 years, have been that team, the archetypal mid-table team.
Even with Hodgson before.
So the safe team, but never anything much more. So this feels particularly significant this time, that they've clearly feel that the backlash from the fans has had an impact and they want more. So, and if that's because of the new Chinese ownership,
if you think about the money,
perhaps there's a catalyst behind that.
The money side, like the Chinese investors didn't get involved because they love West Brom, in the same way that the American investors at Swansea and Palace didn't get involved because they love either of those clubs. So they are guys, basically all of these investors are exactly that. They're investors, the people who have got involved because they want to see a return. You only see the return if you stay in the Premier League. So their sole interest is staying in the Premier League. That's why you see the clubs that are in trouble routinely go out and spend money in January, because it's like, well, it's worth betting 30 or 40 mil for the 160 to 200 million TV revenue we get if we stay up. I guess we should quickly talk about Pulis before we go to talk about who West Brom might go next. You've got to assume he will get a Premier League job at some point. No problems, right?
Well, yeah, and the next team that's in any sort of difficulty, thinking, we could do kind of maybe a sure thing in terms of a bit of organisation, keep us in the division, is the obvious candidate.
Yeah, he's got to be.
In fact, I don't think it's actually out of it's not unrealistic. If Moyes, say, he has a difficult 2-3 months at West Ham, they're suddenly looking, this is going to go bad. Yeah. We could go down.
You get the Davids on the phone, and you go, look, I want a big survival bonus. I'll come in for 3 months and I'll give it my best. And that's probably going to be more appetizing than whatever Moyes has to offer, based on what we've seen so far. If you had to bet. If you had to bet, is Tony Pulis in charge of a Premier League club by the end of this season?
Yes, I would say so.
I'd say it's more likely than not. Of course, the thing that's hanging out there is the Wales job. And it's whether he thinks he wants some time away from the day to day.
I mean, it's interesting,
it's
because
a job he fits for, you think,
by being Welsh,
but also there's the pragmatic style, perhaps with the one star player.
He'd probably smash up international football. I think so. He'd be one of the best managers in international football.
I was just about to say that. I think because he'd give you that kind of basic level of organisation that a lot of international teams lack, and then when you have that on a star like Bale on top of that, if he's fit, of course,
you play him left back. But the problem is actually, if you look at Pulis as an international manager, we always complain because you go to these tournaments and then all the rubbish teams basically just set up 4-4-2 and kind of or 5-4-1 and try it. Yeah, exactly. I mean, like the minor nations like Ireland, and they try and just block out the good teams. Wales at any tournament under Pulis would be dreadfully unwatchable, but Bale's heading home 2-3 kicks a game, and then they're probably going
to
be quite good.
The one thing, actually, to be fair, that season when Palace stayed up, when he kind of 2013-14, they were occasionally actually good to watch.
They were great to watch. Yeah.
Well, that's not going to matter, because they had pace in the break. I know this is an extreme example, but I was at that Liverpool the famous Christian Bull game, they were actually exhilarating that match.
That was one of the best Premier League games I've ever seen. Yeah. Just in terms of, it was exactly that. It was exciting football. It was Liverpool. I mean, Liverpool still can't defend, so it's funny 4 years on. Mm. But you just couldn't deal with it. You know, it was Zaha and Dwight Gayle and Bolasie and these guys. So you have seen it with Pulis, where he can have good players doing good things.
And like we said, the clubs, and to a lesser extent perhaps the players, get bored of Pulis and what he delivers. That impact might be lessened on an international stage where it's the contact time is so much less. So you might be just more get in, get out. And
you're kind of selling me on Wales, but I think it's a good idea.
In terms of his effectiveness, actually, there's this whole debate in Ireland now about whether O'Neill should go and all this, and whether he's done much. And O'Neill's main strength is basically in motivation and kind of coming in today, but there's a lot of criticism now because they don't do anything on team shape. Now, Ireland have had relative success with their quality of players without that kind of work on team shape and that kind of ultra organisation. So what could Pulis do with that? Because I think he'd bring the similar level of motivation.
Yeah,
thing to Allardyce, who was linked with the Scotland job and the US job, which just from a pure outside point of view, it'd be fascinating to see, in a similar way to Pulis, if his style would translate to international football. Yeah.
But also, if you just look at some of the clowns in charge of some of these international teams, Pulis...
One
of the worst coaches I've ever seen. But the Pulis and Allardyce in actual international football, I really think they'd be good.
Yeah,
you know, you could chuck them anywhere. I mean, as long as don't want to give Allardyce to a team that doesn't speak English, because it seems like it's going to be problematic. But USA, I mean, the USA job, I think, won't be defined for something like 6 months because they've got presidential elections, and you can almost bank on them to choose the complete wrong candidate anyway.
Yeah,
but Allardyce at Scotland and Pulis with Wales would be really interesting in the way that, Gordon Strachan Scotland was not.
Mm.
And Chris Coleman, actually, we should mention, Chris Coleman took the Sunderland job on Friday night.
Yeah.
I discussed this with you, Ben, when I got the phone call. I don't think Sunderland is a club you want to go into right now.
Well, I'd been told by someone connected that previous, when they were talking to people, previous potential candidates, there was all sorts of stipulations that, and some candidates were worried about the exact direction of the club because of the amount of kind of clauses involved. So it's interesting that they've actually convinced Coleman.
With Short's ownership hanging over it makes things problematic, because if they do get a new owner, do they want a new manager straight away?
Yeah, I mean, that's why, personally, I mean, apart from the fact
seems like a risk.
How many clubs have we seen that take the double drop, you know? Like, your boys, you've seen... you look at that Sunderland team, and it's... Did you see Sunderland Millwall, the goals this weekend?
Absolutely dreadful.
Goalkeeping. Dreadful. All four goals. One of the worst goalkeeping games I've ever seen. You absolutely have to check it out if you haven't. I'm sure it's legally available on social media. But Sunderland are a club that are in relegation trouble. They are for sale. They have no real definite future. And Chris Coleman, he obviously wants a club job. He obviously wants a club job. But he's decided that that's the best for his prospects. I just don't understand it.
And especially when it feels like stock will never be higher as it is now. Well, actually, no, I suppose, had he left after Euro 2016.
But I think he realised he couldn't get a Premier League job, because he certainly tried. So then you've got to look at, like, so what am I looking at? In the Championship, they are at least one of the richer clubs, bigger clubs in the Championship, even if they're underperforming. Maybe you want to overtake an underperforming club, because if you could just get them back to their actual natural level, that's going to be the top of the Champo or the bottom of the Premier League, right?
Yeah. It is interesting, actually, how Premier League club went from, given sort of there was so much debate about it. And I do think it just shows that, basically, I know Welsh fans don't like this being said, but because he had Bale, it just kind of colour everything else about the job. Like, you don't know.
And because, I don't think we know how good he actually is.
He qualified for 2014 Euros.
Precisely.
He was linked with Palace a bunch. I'd never wanted him to get the Palace job. I don't think he's shown enough in management really yet.
I think it's a risk for both sides. I think it's arguably a bigger risk for him, just because of where he's going into. Mm. And look at the succession of managers Sunderland have had, and managers with a better track record than him have failed. So what makes him think he's different, or that the club environment now is different when they're at this lowest?
In my experience, players do like him, which is, I think, you know, as long as it's stupid, it still is something that's important, you have to have the players liking you and listening to you and stuff. And the thing with him is, it's like, okay, you go into Sunderland, but it could be one of those situations where the players are also scarred, and like, they don't care about the situation, they don't care about the club, they don't care about whatever. You know, you've seen that with relegated teams where you've got players who are just there picking up basically hangover Premier League wages of £80,000 a week, and they don't really want to be playing Millwall on a Saturday in front of a half-empty stadium of light. And they don't want to go to Burton Albion away, because it's not what they thought they should be doing. Mm. It's not what they signed up for. They signed up for away days at Old Trafford. I think we've probably excessively covered the manager situation, especially when we've got Saturday, the North London Derby, to talk about. Miguel, you were there.
Yep.
We both watched it, Ben and I, and it was, fair to say, a surprise.
Yeah, I think you have to give Arsenal and Wenger a lot of credit. I remember when I saw that team, and it was Arsenal's best available 11, to be fair. But you think, your best available 11 isn't necessarily your best 11 for any specific game.
No, but it's fair to say, though, we thought that at the time. Yeah. Having Mustafi back, actually, you know, he can be a bit soft at times, but I think he is still in their best 11.
Yeah, but that was it. So he didn't have a defence midfielder, really, on the pitch. Ramsey was kind of in that role. And I asked Wenger about it afterwards, and he goes, what changed? Our strikers, our front three, pressed very high. I mean, because they didn't let Spurs out. And given that there's so much has been made of how Spurs kind of impose their will on games, just how solid this team is, it was really conspicuous to see them kind of fail to live with Arsenal's tenacity. They were pretty meek on Saturday, Spurs.
Dreadful first half, I thought, the way they couldn't get out.
I mean, it's easy to point to, I mean, Kane and Ali were nowhere near fit, fair to say. But it's not just on that. I mean, it's not their two best players, but Eriksen wasn't at it. They couldn't get their foot on the ball in the middle. We said that they missed someone like Harry Winks, just someone to settle the game down and get out. Because they were, at the start of the game, first 20, 30 minutes, they were just lumping the ball out and then just coming back at them.
With someone like Eriksen, actually, I wonder, I mean, is almost kind of a hangover inevitable after what he did on the Tuesday?
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like, a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at UH1.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Maybe, but...
Or is it... I would almost have that kind of a game like that actually the best one to get you straight back into it.
Especially given the form he's been in.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
De Bruyne aside, best player in the league so far this season. Yeah, so it was surprising to see him have so little impact on the game.
I thought Davinson Sanchez was really good.
Yeah.
You know, it's weird that a centre-back on a losing team would play that well, but he really... You know, they just weren't themselves. Like, you don't really often see Spurs pressed into action defensively that much. And they couldn't, you know, they were basically, we've all been in this situation like Sunday League where you're just booting the ball clear and it's just coming back at you and you can't do anything about it.
And
there was a period between like the 20th and 35th minute where they just could not get the ball out of their half and Arsenal had them penned in. And it was actually pretty impressive because you haven't seen Arsenal dominate because that's what they were doing, was dominating. They were dominating a good team.
Yeah.
An actually good team. You know, and to be fair, Spurs, for all their good results this season, didn't really turn up in a big game. And you got, was it?
There is an issue with Spurs. They haven't yet won when the pressure's really been on.
Was it played 17? Pochettino's away games against fellow top four, was it top six clubs? So played 17, 1-1.
Yeah.
That is an issue if you're trying to gatecrash the actual title picture.
Yeah, completely, yeah.
But you can probably already this year, I say it, just rule them out. You know, City looks so good and they've already...
I would have thought they were going to be City's best challengers, actually.
But United defeat, you can say, oh, they didn't have Kane. Mm-hmm. And I do think that's a fair thing to point to. What's the excuse this time? Yeah. What is the excuse this time?
Yeah, no, they should be going to... They should have been going to Arsenal and imposing themselves in that game. Because I think, despite some of the debate over the weekend, they are objectively a better team than Arsenal right now. They're going to work better, probably have a better first 11. And they should.
What about the combined 11, Miguel? Because that's that's what everyone wants to talk about. What about the combined 11?
Yeah.
What do you feel about combined 11s?
Should we do it for the fun, actually?
Well, you know what we did?
On Saturday, we didn't
do combined 11s because I don't know really what they add
to
any pre-game coverage. It's an entirely arbitrary and pointless thing.
Yeah. Especially, you know, when you are in the stage where you're picking them, you're kind of, well, I have to go 4-3-3 here, but that player doesn't play there, but I have to get him in. That's all. He doesn't play there for that team, so it becomes so pointless.
And the fallout, obviously, from one news outlet doing that ends up with Arsenal tweeting to their 12 million followers, essentially inviting them to harass the guy that had written it. Pretty bad look for everyone. Probably shouldn't dwell on it, but yeah, be better at stuff, Arsenal, was my advice. I thought... Really, for Pochettino, if that's going to be the sort of big game performance in the Premier League, they're really going to have to focus on the FA Cup and Champions League. Now, given what he said about the FA Cup, Pochettino, so it's what, Champions League or bust for Spurs? And for all the, you know, Arsenal fans get annoyed with Spurs being praised all this, kind of all the time, basically. But Spurs really are going to do it again, where they might finish like third, get knocked out in the round of 16, knocked out in the FA Cup, and then it's another season where they don't win anything.
To be fair, they do tend to go, or they have in the last 2-3 seasons, gone on a huge post-Christmas run under Pochettino, so that could change things a little bit.
It's interesting to point out that people who doubted their title credentials this year, it was because of Wembley and because it was playing at home, and this is obviously an away game where the Emirates has hardly been a fortress at the time. They've got a good record there, but it's not an imposing place to be. And it was interesting to... Certainly what we've seen is lunchtime games on a Saturday, Arsenal going away to a big team and getting blown away. And it was the exact opposite.
They started the season slow, Spurs.
It's true.
If they hadn't started the season that slow with that ludicrous, that weird thing where Kane didn't score till September.
Yeah, and then the Burnley they've
just cost themselves points at the start of the year.
And it's particularly costly for them because they are kind of fighting the tide in the sense that just... They can't spend what the bigger sides spend, so they need to kind of maximise every element. So then to kind of slip up like that?
Basically, my thing with Tottenham is that I don't think it's sustainable, given their wage bill and stuff like that. You know, I think they're doing great. And as long as Poch is there and Kane is there and stuff, everyone is, it looks willing to buy in. You know, the fact that you've got Dele Alli potentially willing to sign a new contract there on well below his market value wage-wise is important.
You do feel, though, at that their window is closing.
Well, precisely. This is,
they've had two seasons where they were so close to almost touching it and not getting it. And then this season...
Well, this season's a write-off then. So this season, they're not going to challenge. You know, they might do well in a cup. I guess best case scenario, you win the Champions League, but really unlikely. So you get to the quarters or semis of the Champions League and you win the FA Cup, finish second or third. That is now kind of the realistic best case scenario for Spurs, we agree. So it is a waste because you do feel like this is a team that over the last few years could have won the Premier League or might, you know, it might do. And maybe next season could be literally their last chance
to do it. They don't want to get into a chance of always next season either, into a situation. But actually on that, because that Pochettino and Danny Rose is interesting because he did. I was in Wenger's Mondays. It was Jack Pitbrook in Pochettino's Mondays, and I think there was maybe he didn't like some of the Danny Rose questions. But I mean,
so what did he like? I missed this kind of little Danny Rose drama. What?
It was basically, like, I mean, there was some suggestion. Now, to be fair, I think Spurs and Pochettino were they were correct that Pochettino was injured. It wasn't just a decision to drop him.
Rose was injured.
Rose was injured. Yeah. But I mean, I think what's more relevant here is that people now are wondering whether, and Rose himself is thinking he could be sold, apparently, according to those close to him. But people are wondering whether, because of what Rose said in the summer about transfers, whether he's going to be yet another player to cross Poch and, you know, not see a future at the club. And that's another affair for you now. But I think Poch is probably right in that he has to kind of take a line here. But yet, it doesn't mean that what Rose said was incorrect. And I think there is he did kind of pinpoint what the issue for Spurs is.
Which is?
Basically, they're overperforming to such an extent that it's unsustainable. Players who want better wages, better contracts. And it's like, I suppose, Rafa Benitez's famous comment about the blanket, either covering, covering your legs or your head. But ultimately, they don't have the resources to finance this.
No, it does expose, as I say, the limitations of overperforming. I guess, is there anything other points you want to make about the North London derby? Do you think we covered it all?
I think Wenger's approach is particularly interesting. We've seen in away games where they've gone to try and stifle other teams, particularly at Chelsea at the Bridge earlier this season. He chose Alex Iwobi and Danny Welbeck. The fact that he went for that attacking front three with Sanchez, Ozil and Lacazette, who are his best three attacking players, and Ozil so excelled, I thought it was an interesting... That worked for him, really.
The
pressing, yeah. It seemed to be, beforehand, you look at the lineups and you're inviting Tottenham onto you to just wave after wave, but it didn't play out that way. And I think Ozil was excellent. He always has in his defences, the 12, 13 kilometres he runs, but he ran the game on Saturday, it was great to see a player who everyone knows has got that ability. He's won everything there is to win.
And on ability, that is their best front three, right?
Yeah, precisely. But it was, I mean...
won the Champions League.
True.
What?
Yeah, I was winning everything there is to win.
Oh, yeah, well, you know. No, but at some point, he will, probably with Man United next season. But if we've done North London derby, there's a couple of other games. Man City again. Did you see the goals from that?
Yeah, it was ridiculous.
Yeah, absurd team.
But the other side of that as well is... Every time you think there's going to be a tricky kind of hurdle for City, they just walk all over it.
Yeah, yeah. Kevin De Bruyne, face. What a guy.
The parallels with the same game last season where it was I'm not a coach who coaches tackles, and then they go there again and they're the exact same position they are in.
Yeah. No, Stonesy's out. John Stones injured for a time.
6 weeks.
So
6 weeks, is it?
We might see Big Eliakim getting a good run out over the festive period.
What is interesting about all this, though, as well, I mean, are not like... I wonder what it feels like to actually be playing that team right now. She's correct. Like, they've been playing so well.
You back yourself, even at if you're playing left back in that team, how many assists do you get if you play for the next four games?
Fabian Delph's managing to play left back, which is as remarkable as anything else.
It's the sort of thing I think, if I'm playing up front, even with my lack of ability and feet, I'm probably getting 4 to 8 goals over the rest of the season.
I think it is interesting if you look at the corresponding game last season, they went and. That was almost an idea of the whole Guardiola first season, was going to Leicester, to a Leicester team that was hopeless at that point in time, and they got played off the park.
Yeah, they got picked
off. And they go back there this time, at Guardiola's highest point, and they've just rolled them over again. It's just a machine that just keeps on going. You really can't see. I mean, they will lose a game, you'd think, at some point, but you can't pick one out where they can be anything other than 2-3-4 goal winners.
Yeah. As a Palace fan, how do you feel about the way they have taken your song for their Guardiola chant?
Yeah, whatever. You know, they, like, I'd be happy if I was winning the league as well. So, you know, it's just...
Would you be glad all over?
Yes, I would. I would. Currently not, because Palace threw away the lead twice against Everton in a game they should have won. Never a penalty for the first goal, and the second was just dreadful defending. We'll go over that. Liverpool 3, Southampton 0. Salah, 2 goals.
Good player.
Good player. Fast. Very fast. Southampton, yeah. Southampton's sneaky bad as well. A team that kind of people forget, but Pellegrino's kind of been up and down. Recently, Johnny went down and met him. Exclusive interview with Pellegrino. If you want to read that on the website, you know, Google is your friend.
Pellegrino managed him, or what was it? Or did he?
They played against the Southampton staff as a team. Yeah, but it sounds like it was a fun day. Man United 4, Newcastle 1. I didn't actually see this one, Miguel. So it's over to you.
Yes, Pogba made a huge difference to United. He was brilliant, and by extension, then the team was brilliant, just because they just had much more dimension to their play. There was just so much more ambition and creativity about them.
And Zlatan's back in the mix.
Yeah.
How do we feel about this?
I think
he might play number 10. Is this going to be a thing, do we think?
I do, because Mourinho has struggled with that a little bit. I mean, Mkhitaryan's
struggled a lot of late.
Then you do still wonder about whether you completely trust Mata, given he's only just put him into the team now. Because
do you trust Zlatan to do the defensive work that Jose wants? Or is this the one example where Jose would just be like, I'm not expecting you to do the defensive work because you're such a concern for the other team that they're going to be more worried about you than you are about them?
Possibly,
is that fair?
Yeah.
I know, I'm just spitballing. It just seems to me that if you're not playing him up front, then I don't see how he's ever doing the work.
It's going to be interesting to see how he uses him, because, I mean, Pogba was great in that zone at the weekend. And you fear that perhaps Zlatan coming back to get the ball might interfere with how well Pogba can do that as well. And Pogba is your best player, as he showed at the weekend. You should play to his strengths rather than Zlatan's.
Yeah.
And I guess the Sunday game, the only thing that needs to be said, David Moyes' factory of sadness.
Once again, after the game, just some of his comments are just...
It's a conveyor belt of misery, isn't it? Wow. I mean, Watford again, Marco Silva, the guy's doing an incredible job. But, you know, you must love it when David Moyes is coming to town on a Sunday afternoon.
I mean, the fact
all the lads have had a nice haircut.
The fact their fans have been told to not ring 999 to complain about how bad their team is.
Well, idiocy as well.
It also speaks to that as well.
Yeah, yeah. I think I've got one of the Moyes quotes here somewhere. Thought it was a big job. There are some players with big reputations who disappointed me a little bit, and I thought, you'll show me more and you'll show me a little bit if you play in the team regularly. But today was really the first game I had a chance to see them play. They didn't. They need to show that if this is their reputation, why have they got it?
Well, they got the reputation because the guys who just hired you overpaid for these players because they were offered them. That's it. I mean, that's literally it.
To turn on your players after 90 minutes is... It's not a great look and doesn't bode well for...
I think he probably
Tony
views this as like...
arrival in April.
The hard line, like, I'm going to get into him early. It's like, they all hate you. So, like, why are you doing this? But anyway, before I besmirch the poor man anymore, I will depart. I would like to thank Miguel for his time coming in today. Yep. We'll see you next week.
Yes, we will actually, before I go to Russia.
Yes, World Cup draw. So we'll have a big World Cup draw pre-chat next week.
Can you really preview a draw?
Can we preview an administrative function? Mm. You bet we can. Ben, thank you for joining us today. A rare appearance, but a golden one. And thank you to producer Matt Murphy. Thank you to our friends at Acast. Thank you to Apple. Thank you to the Lord. Thank you to the Met Office. And we'll be with you next week.